May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have 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 your attention, please?
This is Attention Please, your radio news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula.
This is Steve Evans for Attention Please, and I am at the Jefferson County Recycling Center, and I'm talking to Laura Tucker, who is, what's your actual title with public health?
Environmental specialist.
But you're basically an educator, right?
Correct. So my other tagline that's not the official county title is education and outreach coordinator.
And just happens, well, this is Earth Month, or the month of Earth Day, and so I decided that we should really do something about recycling and about climate and maybe the relationship between the two. And it just happened that you were doing a program earlier this week for something called Climate on Tap down at the Finn River Cidery, and you did a presentation that had a lot of really interesting exercises and facts, and I thought maybe we'd try to get some of those facts out to the public today, because there were things that were sort of unexpected, and you sort of started the program off with a list of recyclables and asked everybody to guess which had the largest carbon footprint to recycle and which had the lowest, and what the comparison was between not recycling and recycling. And so without going into what my guesses were, which were all wrong, not all wrong, I did guess that cardboard here had the lowest carbon footprint, and that proved to be true. And why is that true?
The reason why that's true is because it goes to our paper mill. So it goes a very short distance before it's made into more cardboard boxes or craft paper.
Right. And actually that, you said, was one of the most significant factors in the efficiency of recycling is, well, how far is it going? And maybe you could go down the list of, you know, what other materials there were and what their carbon footprints are and why.
Well, and I should say first up, we're standing here at the recycling center that Skookum Enterprises runs, and they're a fabulous nonprofit that's been handling our recycling for a long time. And one of the reasons why Jefferson County is way ahead of the curve is because we separate our recycling, and then Skookum finds end markets, ideally as close to home as possible. And the next one, I believe, in line was mixed paper. And the current paper mill is in Longview, Washington, so that's where all of our mixed paper goes. The next one down was glass, and our glass goes to a glass recycling facility in Seattle. Most glass in recycling systems tends to go to what they call daily cover, which they have to cover the landfill every day when they put garbage in it. And so oftentimes that's what that glass is used for, primarily because it breaks in that system. And it's good for daily cover. And then they don't have to separate broken glass shards out of everything else.
So it's actually not recycled at all. It's actually landfilled.
Correct. It depends, again, on who you're... Some of the glass that goes through these sorting facilities that the haulers take their recycling to do have glass factories that they send things to. But ours goes to strategic materials and becomes new bottles. And because glass can be infinitely recycled, that lowers the carbon footprint. It is a heavier material, but when all things considered between the amount of energy it takes to melt those bottles down and make them into new bottles and how far it has to go, that's why glass was the next one in line.
And where is strategic materials located?
It's in Seattle. And then, oh, I'm sorry, actually, I think above glass. I'm not remembering exactly, but I think steel cans might be above glass, steel and aluminum cans.
Aluminum cans, I think you said in the program, were more efficient because they melt at a lower temperature.
They do, and they're very light, so they're able to be easily transported. But we send our plastic and our cans, both aluminum and tin, or steel cans really, to a sorting facility, the Pioneer facility in Tacoma. And they then have machinery that will put a magnet on it and pull out those steel cans. They put a reverse eddy current on the aluminum and it blows it up into another bin, which leaves our plastic. And if it's not contaminated, it's pretty easy to sort into the two different categories that the plastic is going to go into. One is made out of PETE and the other one's made out of HDPE.
I'll tell you that one of my wrong guesses was that, oh, well, plastic is, I mean, it melts at a low temperature and it's lightweight and it must be really, like, you know, easy to recycle. But that was a really pretty naive point of view. And maybe you could tell me why plastic is actually at the bottom of the list, the biggest carbon footprint, messiest material on the planet.
Well, first, I want to acknowledge your good guess, though, based on some really good thinking. And as a science teacher, I appreciate good thinking. So your guess wasn't wrong. It was a good guess. It just, the information added to that changed that perspective. First of all, plastic is about 90% or 95% petroleum. So we're pulling carbon that was stored hundreds of millions of years ago underground, and it was stored when it was much, much hotter. The seas were way higher. I mean, it was a very different climate then. So that carbon has been stored underground, and when we pull it up and burn it, it releases carbon dioxide into the atmosphere that has not been in our atmosphere for over 200,000 years, and it's causing some problems. So that's number one. Number two is that most plastic isn't recyclable. Even though it has those arrows on it and a little number, we've all been taught that that meant it was recyclable, and it really wasn't. The numbers indicate the main plastic, not everything that's in there, and the arrows got thrown on by the plastic industry in the 80s, taking a symbol from Earth Day in 1970 to indicate that it was recyclable, and most of those arrows got put on products before there even was a place to recycle them. And along comes China at one point saying, hey, there was, and I don't know how this agreement came about, but China ships us a lot of materials on container ships, and those container ships go back empty. So there was this decision that, hey, we could send you our recycling to make into more of the products that we buy from you. And so let's fill these container ships with our recycling, at which point the haulers, the garbage and recycling haulers said, hey, put everything into one bin. We'll sort it out. It'll all work that way. And so we really have been sending a pretty terrible product to China. China realized, due to a fabulous documentary called Plastic China, made by someone here in the U.S., that they were really destroying their environment and their atmosphere, and that most of the plastic was being processed by families and kids, and they would pull out the good stuff and burn the rest. And China has some state-of-the-art facilities that burn their plastic and make energy out of it, but not so much. So they tried to slow that down, and finally they stopped it altogether in 2018. With what they call blue skies. And so we are not able to send anything to China with more than 0.5% of contamination. And primarily we were sending them paper and plastic, not so much cans. So that stopped. And so we had to start looking at local markets. And sadly now a lot of third world countries are still taking our plastic because we've been convinced that if we put it in this bin, it will go someplace good. And Jefferson County has had an eye on where our plastic goes for a long time, which is why we've never taken that whole range of plastics. So from 1992, when we started the recycling program, to 2015, we only took plastic bottles and jugs, and bottles that have a number one on them, and nothing else that has a number one on it was ever recyclable, even though that wasn't particularly made clear to the public. But that was the truth of it. And so in 2015, we were assured that the dairy tubs, which generally have a number five on them, and buckets and plant pots have a market and a sustainable one. So we started that program. And now the truth really is they're going overseas. And once they leave our shores, you really can't trace where they go. And most likely they're going to a third world country that will pick through them. Maybe they get melted down, maybe they get burned, maybe they end up in the ocean or a river or a landfill that's not regulated like they are here. So we just don't know. And because Jefferson County had a policy in their solid waste management plan that said our recycling would be handled in a socially and environmentally responsible way, sending your plastic somewhere where you don't know where it's ending up is neither of those. So what we're trying to help people do now is just buy less of it. And we realize that that's very difficult when plastic is just so prevalent. And with the oil industry in a bit of a crisis as we try to get off of fossil fuels because of climate change, they still want to burn their oil. They've got a lot of it. And plastic is the place they want to put it. And so now they're trying to convince us that putting all of our food in plastic is the way to go. And they'll tell you that it does have a climate change impact because it's not as heavy as glass or metal containers. And that's true. But glass and metal do not put carcinogens and endocrine disruptors into your body. And we love all the traffic that's coming through here because people are recycling like crazy. So that's the big problem with plastic. And it was hard for me as someone who's been a diligent recycler my whole life to learn that you know, there is no Santa Claus, and that wasn't being properly recycled. And in order to recycle something, it means it has to be made into something new. Burning is not recycling. Landfilling is not recycling.
Well, another thing that I learned years ago about plastic is that for the great majority of plastic, it's not really recycling, it's downcycling. And maybe you could define that for us.
Technically, it depends on whose definition you want to look at, but technically, if you recycle something, you make it from what it was into the same product again. So our glass bottles really get recycled. They get melted down and made back into glass bottles. So there's less energy in trying to make it into something new and different. So with plastic pretty much gets two lives. It'll have life number one, and if it's a bottle or a jug and you put it in our recycling bin, it'll get life number two, which may be if it's the number one plastic bottles, like your drink bottles, it might be a fleece jacket, it might be carpet, it might be a day pack, something like that. The number two, some of them actually can be made into more number two bottles. If they're not terribly contaminated, they can keep enough integrity in that plastic. But once they do that, that's pretty much it. The polymers break down. And so plastic maybe gets one, maybe two lives, and maybe if it becomes a number two jug again, it might get a third. But that's about it.
But in any event, Skookum, or the county, has recently made a decision to no longer accept any type of plastic except for bottles and jugs, right? And what happens then to the rest of the plastics that people are using? They just go into the landfill, right?
Well, I should just clarify, we've never taken all those other plastics, right? Even though people in their heart of hearts see those little symbols and put them in there. We've done some contamination audits recently, and the contamination here at the recycling center was 30% in the plastic and cans of things just not, that didn't, either garbage.
Wrong things in there.
Either the wrong things, which was predominantly it, or garbage. And so we put out new flyers. This was about a year and a half ago. We tried all these changes and we knocked the contamination rate here down to 15%, but that's still pretty high. Port Ludlow stayed at about 30%, both in the June and December assessments. And then Quilcene's actually increased from 15% to 30%.
Wow,
well, because we had to close the Brennan drop boxes, the state took the site back, and so I think a lot of folks were just dumping their garbage. When we did the audit, it really should have been 60% contaminated because so much of the recycling and garbage was in plastic bags, and those, you can't sort anything if things are in their plastic bags. So that's one of the worst things you can do is put your recycling in a plastic bag and throw it in the recycling bin, because then the sorting facilities can't sort it and it goes to the garbage. So if we didn't rip apart and all these different bags and shake what was in them out of them, it would have been a 60% contamination rate. And I would like to give a shout out for Port Townsend High School Students for Sustainability, who helped with both of those audits. And the one in December was at 22 degrees. And
oh my gosh,
we were skiing on ice out here. So they did an amazing job sorting through all of that piece by piece. These giant truckloads that came in, we sorted through every single piece. And that's how we got our... So we got a really accurate data on what the contamination rate was. And, of course, the paper and the glass and the cardboard we also looked at, too. Much, much lower.
So you had a little hierarchy of the how many R's are there? There's, like, you know, you had added one from the last time I heard it, and it's actually the most important one, and it was the top one, which is refuse. It occurred to me that with plastics, this fiction of recycling it...
That's a good term.
Has really done a lot of damage, because people are able to imagine that something good is going to happen with these once they throw them in their recycling bins and they're incorrectly putting things in. And maybe we should talk a little bit about some of the things that you should not ever put into your recycling and why, because it's dangerous, right? But the oceans are filling up with plastic now, and there was a Science Times article last week about the plastics that are filtering down to the bottom of the ocean in tiny little bits, sometimes like almost microscopic bits that can be ingested by the tiniest of marine life. And
to their peril. Well, so we can speak to that a little bit. We can get back to the R's in a minute, too. I mean, plastic is forever. when you polymerize oil, it's forever, unless you put it under extreme heat and take it back to its original source. But that takes so much more energy to break plastic back down into fuel oil, into the product that it started from, that it's completely energy inefficient. I mean, beyond belief. It just takes, it's a ridiculous amount of energy that it takes to melt it back down again, that you're spending all this energy to take this product that doesn't have much value to begin with and melt it down into oil. So, you know, heating up our planet trying to melt plastic, and that doesn't make sense.
It burns though, right?
It does burn, and it gives off all kinds of toxic fumes when it does that, and it may not necessarily get down to a usable product. It might end up having to be landfilled after all, and you've created heat and carbon dioxide and toxic fumes in the process. So a lot of times incineration is just not a good idea. We need to improve our technology, and we may someday, in which case we can head back to those landfills and, as someone called them, temporary storage, until we have the technology to process all the things we're throwing in them right now.
Do you happen to know what percentage of the stuff that goes into landfills is actually plastic? I mean, have those assessments been done?
I don't know how much is plastic, but I know about a third of the average person's garbage is recyclable, and about a third is compostable. And then about a third is garbage, and a lot of that is plastic, like straws and forks and those single-use plastic things that really have no home. But it's a dilemma, and it's been hard for me to kind of get my head around it. We do have a lot of folks that do what we call wish cycling, where they think that, oh, please, if I put this in there, it's going to be made into something else. And the sad news, it really isn't. And unfortunately, the plastic industry really is to fault for that. Mostly we've been sold a bill of goods for a really long time. So I know that's difficult. My husband is a big yogurt eater and comes in those dairy tubs. So what he got for his birthday was a yogurt maker with glass jars. And also the food co-op, and I think Aldridge's, sells yogurt in reusable containers. I believe that you pay a deposit and they wash them. So there is no energy to melt them down and make them into new jars. They just wash them. And again, in my childhood, we washed bottles. We reused bottles. You took them back to the store. There was a deposit. You took them back to the store, and they washed them, and there were a few scratches on them, and nobody cared. They were perfectly sanitary. So that may be some other way that we will address our glass issue, too. Might make a little shout out to the co-op, too. If you bring in a glass jar, they want the label off so that people can see it, but they will wash that and sanitize it, and they put it out for you to grab if you want to buy something in bulk. So those are free containers to put bulk items in.
Let's talk a little bit about the consequences of not recycling. You had a bunch of facts out there about how many more trees, how much more energy, how much, I don't know if you have those facts and figures in your mind without your PowerPoint.
I do know that, what is it, for three feet of newspaper equals a tree. So if you recycle 3 feet of newspaper, you've saved one tree from being made into virgin pulp. We're putting up a fairly extensive FAQ page on the solid waste, Jefferson County's solid waste page, under recycling changes. And so I should throw some of those fun facts in, because I think people enjoy those. And they also see that by recycling this aluminum can, I can run one aluminum can, I believe, will take care of running your TV for 3 hours. So, you know, sometimes there's some kind of nice connections with, if I put this can in the recycling, then it equals energy saved for this, and I'm now watching my television for 3 hours. So I just saved the energy that I'm burning right now by putting this can in the recycling. And aluminum is the quickest from throw your can in the recycling bin to can back on the shelf. It's about 60 days on the average. Sometimes I've heard even 2 weeks. So, and aluminum, you can recycle forever. Once it's made, we dig up the bauxite and create the aluminum, which is just an element in and of itself. So they have to burn off all the extra stuff. But once you get it down to the aluminum element, that's infinitely recyclable. So that's a great thing. Same thing with glass. It's made from sand. And once it's all melted down into glass, you can remelt that glass forever. You can't say that of plastic. And paper has a life, too, where I think cardboard fibers, you can recycle 7 times before they're broken down enough that they just can't make another cardboard box. But then they might go into your egg carton. So paper does have an end point. But paper is biodegradable. It was once alive. It can break down into smaller components that plants and animals can eat. Not true of plastic.
So if you have a choice between buying your sodas or beers in aluminum or glass, and you're going to recycle, which is the better choice?
Aluminum cans has a lower carbon footprint than glass. But you can't wash an aluminum can and then refill it. I don't think that's a possibility. But if we get to the point where we reuse our bottles, and you can go to the brew pub here with several of them, with your growlers, and refill those growlers. So there is a way to do that. So that way, your glass beer would be a much lower, significantly lower carbon footprint than the aluminum can you have to put back in the recycling. Anytime you don't have to process something, break it down and make it into something new, you're saving definitely energy. And helping the planet out in the process. Okay. Did you want to get back to your R's? I was going to answer those.
Yeah, let's go through the R's. Okay. Let's do that.
Well, we've changed the back of our flyer, our new recycling flyer. We've changed both sides. The front is much more simplified. We're focusing now on what we can take rather than what we can't, because what we can't can be a real long list, and that gets people confused. So pretty much now, if it's not on the list, trust us, it's not recyclable in Jefferson County. And with our source separation and the fact that ours has such a low carbon footprint too, and also it's much more of your product gets recycled. Very little goes into the landfill. In fact, almost nothing if we recycle properly and don't throw things in there that shouldn't be there. So on the back of the flyer, we have an inverted waste pyramid. So the priority is refuse, meaning try not to buy the problem thing. So in our house, we're not buying yogurt in plastic containers anymore. So I know that may be difficult for some folks, and plastic doesn't break, so there's a bit there. So it's a choice, and we're certainly not putting any value on anybody's choices, but we're just offering some suggestions. So refuse is the top, and then rethink. Like, do I need this? Can I get this in a different way? Hey, I can get this clean glass jar at the co-op to put some bulk items in. And then there's a lot of, you can get to 8 R's if you work at it, but repair is another R. So ideally buying things that we can repair rather than being this throwaway society. The Marine Science Center is running repair cafes. And if you go on their webpage, I'm sure you can find out more about those, where you can bring all kinds of items in. Right now, when they have their event, you bring your item in, leave it. Some wonderful volunteer in the community repairs that item, whether it's clothing or appliances or a broken lamp or something like that, and then you go back and pick it up. But once our viral rate drops to the point where we can all gather again... The
people doing that free of charge?
Yes. Yes. Wow. Yeah. A little bit of it is being covered by the Department of Ecology in a grant right now, but we're trying to make that an ongoing thing where maybe at some point there will be a charge because we want to support our local repair folks. But for right now, I think for 2 years, it's always free of charge. It's a pretty wonderful thing. They had one right before COVID hit. I think it was February of 2020. They had one in person, and it was highly successful. So based on that model, they're continuing with that.
How often is that happening?
I think they're doing six a year, as somebody is very carefully recycling all their glass over there. I believe they're six a year, and the Marine Science Center's webpage will have that information. And so then finally, you know, rot is one of them too, which is compost your food scraps, if at all possible, and your yard waste, because that's a highly wonderful product for all your plants in your garden. And then the very last thing is recycle. Recycle is the last option before landfill, because it does take a lot of energy to make things into new products. So we're trying to hit all those other things first before we get to recycle. And even though recycling is important, it does take energy to process all those items. And it takes transportation to get them somewhere too.
We're close to running out of time, but I would like to quickly cover some of the do's and don'ts and some of the things that sort of surprised me in your presentation the other night, including I have for years been laboriously taking all of the labels off our dog food cans. And I didn't have to, did I?
Yes, you did initially.
Oh, okay.
The technology changed.
Okay.
You just didn't get the memo, and I'm sorry for that. But label, they've changed the technology so that they can take labels. There's some process, and I do have a promise to the Climate on Tap folks that I'm going to get a hold of one of our Solid Waste Advisory Committee members who used to run Nucor Steel, where our cans go, and I want to ask him about what they did to change that label situation.
And then the other thing is lids. You know, we've always been told you can't recycle the lids, the can lids, the plastic lids, the jar lids, and why is that?
There's a bunch of reasons. The problem with the plastic lids is right where we're standing. We don't get a chance to take a look at it right now, but when there's plastic lids left on these bottles and they bale them here, those things shoot off, and they can be a real health hazard for folks that work here. So that's why no plastic lids. Some other recycling systems will let you screw them on and leave them on. Oftentimes they're made out of a different plastic than what they're stuck onto. But once they get shredded, sometimes they can separate those. So that's the plastic lids. If you have plastic lids that are 3 inches in diameter or bigger, you can put those in your recycling. They won't get caught in the machinery, the sorting machinery. That's another problem with the smaller lids. They get caught in the sorting machinery and then it wrecks the machinery. They have to shut everything down and clean it. Metal lids are also a hazard because they're sharp for workers, and then they also get caught in the sorting machinery too. So the trick that I suggest is put your metal lids inside your metal cans and smash them. And you can do that with like beer and soda beverage metal lids too, or metal lids on top of your little glass bottle of tea that you just bought. You can put that in a can and smash it, make a little castanet out of it. The reason why that's not on our flyer is that it's a pretty complex process and it would take so much space to write all that out, and then people would read none of our flyer. But it is on our FAQ page to do that, to suggest that people smash the lids inside their cans.
All right, so for the final question, I'm going to ask, you know, so what happens to everything else? And how much goes each day?
So you mean what happens to all of our garbage?
Yes.
So we, our garbage goes to Roosevelt Landfill, which is about 350 miles from here. It is initially trucked from here to Tacoma, and in Tacoma it hits a train. And trains are actually fairly efficient transportation. Trucks are not. So I do not know the carbon footprint of our particular trash. I do know we send about 3 truckloads a day to Roosevelt from Jefferson County. Close to, I believe it's like a semi-sized that get loaded up on the other side there. And about a third of our trash is recyclables. About a third is something that could have been composted, and about a third is just trash that we just have no way to deal with except dump it in the landfill. So if we could reduce our, by carefully refusing, reducing, repairing, all that kind of thing, and recycling and composting, which I know is not possible for all of us, and or even to come close to that, but we could reduce our truck to 1 a day, which would be really nice. But that's the landfill, that the nearest one and easiest one for us to get to from here. It's a long ways. So I imagine the carbon footprint's fairly high. So whatever we can do to reduce our garbage is also a wonderful thing to do for the planet as well. And we do produce a lot of garbage. I know sometimes it's just so hard. You buy a box of crackers and it's got all kinds of packaging around, wrapped around packaging, wrapped around packaging. So if we as consumers can let the manufacturers know that we would buy their product if they did this, that, or the other thing and reduced what we have to deal with the packaging, that would be a preferred thing.
One of the things that somebody mentioned the other evening was, if you don't know what to do with it, send it back to the manufacturer.
I thought that was a great idea. And then the other example I gave was when the garbage rates in Germany in the 70s, I believe, went up like crazy. People were complaining to the grocery stores, like, well, this isn't fair. I've got all this packaging and I don't want this packaging. And the grocery stores said, well, too bad. There's nothing we can do about it. And so the consumers said, well, I guess there's something we can. And they would take their crackers out of the box and then leave all the packaging behind in the grocery store. Things changed pretty quickly after that. So I realize sometimes we feel like there's nothing we can do, but there's lots we can do, even little things. But certainly the one suggestion somebody said, which we are not going to advocate as the county, because that probably would not be a good idea, but to be a county policy is to send your waste back to the manufacturers. But that certainly could be an individual choice of saying, you know, here, take this back because I don't want this anymore.
At the Jefferson County Recycling Center with Education and Outreach Coordinator Laura Tucker, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News.